Robert runs, the throw by Torrens, the tag by Iglesias, and he got him. Great throw, better tag. 2-4, caught Stilling, one out.
I don't know if I've seen a catcher throw as well as Luis Torrens has been throwing this year. Seems like every time they need a strike with something on it, he delivers.
12 out of 20 he's thrown out trying to steal this year.
All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Before we get into Alvarez and Torrens, and I think this is something interesting to talk about on the way out. Everybody was talking about the 62 Mets this past weekend, you know, 120 losses. Looks like the White Sox are going to surpass them unless they could go on some kind of hot streak here. And when you look at that club, I mean, the pitching is not terrible, at least what we saw this weekend. Even the bullpen, the arms coming out of the bullpen, I mean, they just don't have enough hitting. But if you stay in enough games, I mean, look at yesterday, like I said, with Buto on the mound, with Benintendi, a pro hitter, a guy that's been successful. All it takes is one swing of the bat for a walk-off. I mean, once you're in a close game with these bad teams, all bets are off. But it just, I looked at the 62 Mets, and I didn't realize they lost 39 one-run games, the 62 Mets. 39 one-run games. And that's a tremendous amount. And if you think about it, I'm trying to bring it up. They were 19-39 in one-run games. We're outscored by 20 runs. And you think about it, I mean, if they just had like 10 of those go their way and they're 29-29, or, you know, five of those, you know, 24 and 35, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, 10 of those puts them in still a bad team, but not historically bad, and maybe they're not viewed in infamy. It's funny, I guess when they do break the record, the conversation with Mets historians would be, is it a record that you're upset to see broken? Because the Mets foundation was amazing and believe in lovable losers. And in a lot of ways, although that's created a really loyal, you know, hardcore, you know, salt of the New York earth type of fan base, I think it's added some negativity to the yoke that we talk about all the time, where maybe the, you know, woe is me and something's going to go wrong. And anytime the Mets win, it's not because they're good or they're built well. It's amazing and believe and miracles. I mean, even you could argue that in the 86 season. And, you know, maybe it's something that with the White Sox taking the mantle away from them is another piece of Mets history moving away from what it's built on into a better new history of fun winning, excellence, good management, and good procurement of players, you know, things that are a little bit more sustainable than amazing and believe. But anyway, let's move on to final thoughts. So Francisco Alvarez, to quote, and anybody, I don't know if he's said it on the broadcast, but in his book, If at First, Keith Hernandez wrote a book with Mike, I think it was Mike Bryan or Mike Bryan, I think, back in 1985. It was called If at First. He talked about at that season when he was in a slump, being in the dark forest. And I think it's fair to say that Francisco Alvarez in the second half is lost in the deep, deep dark forest. After having an 844 OPS in the first half, you know, 296 batting average, getting on base, big hits. Who could forget the big hit in Texas off of David Robertson? Since the All-Star break, Alvarez is hitting .150 with an OPS of .419. And you know, there was a movie with Clint Eastwood called Trouble with the Curve, and the whole point was about scouts versus data and how going to a ballpark and watching a guy and how they handle adversity and how, you know, basically, you know, the point was that the guy that Clint Eastwood wanted to didn't want the team to draft was a guy he didn't think had the makeup and to handle adversity. Not only that, he couldn't hit it off speed pitch. Francisco Alvarez is showing a little trouble with the curve. If you look at his stats against fastballs, I mean, the guy has a slugging percentage over 500. Now, he's below 400 for the year, but he's above 500, a slugging percentage on fastballs. And more, you're seeing the opposition throwing breaking pitches. And even with the big home run he hit off of Baltimore, I think it was Sir Anthony Dominguez, got behind 3-0. The only reason he saw a fastball and he swung, it was probably smart because he wasn't, you know, after that fastball got over, if he didn't swing, he would have just saw breaking stuff, is because it was a 3-0 count and they wanted to get a strike over and they didn't expect him to swing. So it's gotten around the league. Alvarez will chase. Alvarez will be prone to, you know, not hitting the breaking pitch. I mean, his swings this weekend against Chicago were awful. I mean, he was just lost. I mean, taking fastballs down the middle, flailing away at breaking pitches. I mean, there was some ugly, ugly swings. Now, the question is, if he doesn't get out of it, is what he's doing behind the plate good enough to justify being the everyday catcher? Because again, today you saw Luis Torrens, who's not exactly hitting the tar out of the ball either after his hot start, throw out another base runner. He's thrown out 60% of base runners. And with the way it's gone down now, the running game, because of the rules of, you know, only two pickoffs, and, you know, the game is going away, and it will go away from framing if they get into some automatic strike zone. Torrens isn't terrible at that. Not like Alvarez. Alvarez has done pretty well with that. I'd have to look at the advanced metrics, but I think Torrens is not as good as Alvarez. We know that. And just from the eye test, he's not terrible. But his arm around behind the plate is outstanding. I mean, you're going to neutralize the running game with a Torrens behind the plate. Now, I know that Alvarez has that leadership quotient, especially with Diaz. He seems to be the Diaz whisperer. Mendoza keeps bringing him in, you know, to kind of keep Diaz focused and pumped up. I guess that's something that Torrens isn't able to do, per se. But, you know, you take away that, I mean, even with his performance, I mean, so many balls in the dirt getting away from him, mainly because of his style of how he, you know, he doesn't get in front of the ball. He tries to pick everything at, you know, off the ground. You have to start to ask yourself, is Torrens getting more of the playing time something that Carlos Mendoza should consider? Now, he's flat out said it's, you know, it's Alvarez's job and they're going to keep running with him. And probably a lot of that has to do with he's the future. He's the guy that was the number one prospect in baseball. He's the guy that they believe in. I mean, Eric Chavez has come out and felt that he's swinging for the fences and that people are getting in his ear, and that's causing him to have some issues behind the plate. Whatever it is, the Mets are going to ride him, and I think he salvaged himself by being the exact opposite of what you expected coming up. He's been a glove guy first and no bat. Somebody made the point on X, and you got to actually agree with them. Who stole Thomas Nito's body and put it in Francisco Alvarez? Because he's doing a damn good Tomas Nito impression. He really is. And you thought when Nito exited the door that you had a couple of catchers now that not only could play defense, but could give you a good at-bat. I mean, you thought maybe Torrens was league average or maybe slightly below league average, but you knew he could give you a good at-bat. Alvarez, you knew, was going to be a threat. I mean, you had visions like I did of him hitting in the middle of the order, protecting Alonso, and between him and Pete Alonso, together they would be able to hit 80 home runs together, maybe. I mean, that was the plan. I mean, you thought of him hitting, breaking records that, you know, for home runs for Mets catchers, records that have stood since the days of Hundley and Piazza. And it's been the exact opposite. Now, the leadership, the energy, the framing, you know, his arm is not bad, but it's not Torrens. I mean, I get it. But the bat is so bad right now that you have to say to yourself, knowing what Torrens could do behind the plate, does it hurt maybe giving him a couple of more starts a week? I mean, I don't want to get into a situation. We've talked about Mets history, about when they had three catchers, how, you know, some people wanted to pitch to Charlie O'Brien, others wanted to pitch to Rick Cerrone, and nobody wanted to pitch to the best hitter of the three, Mackey Sasser. You don't want to get into a personal catcher situation, although Greg Maddux made a career of that. But you have to ask that question. I mean, Alvarez is completely lost. Torrens is hitting the ball a little bit, and he's throwing people out. And, you know, I know that you could go with catcher's ERA and all that other fun stuff, but at the end of the day, the automatic out that Alvarez has become is concerning. His inability to hit breaking stuff is concerning. And I'll tell you what, the difference between him and Brett Beatty, because, I mean, there's every bit indication, you're not going to do it now, that maybe he needs some time in the minor leagues like Beatty. I think what saved him is that he's played really good defense and the pitchers have enjoyed throwing to him. And the Mets' depth at the position is not quite that of what You know, they didn't have somebody like Mark Vientos on the catching side to be brought up. I mean, they had to go and get Torrens from outside the organization. I mean, was it Logan Porter? They've had to import on the 40-man roster, you know, to be kind of the caddy in the minors. So, you know, that's what saved him. But you could make the argument that Alvarez deserves the Beatty treatment. I mean, you could make the argument that this second half has started to put some questions into who is Francisco Alvarez as an offensive player. Is it just a slump? I mean, he was awful in the second half last year. Again, you're at a point in the season you can't really mess around too much with everything because you've already established kind of a flow and you have your Alvarez as your primary and Torrens is going to play 1 to 2 times a week, probably be your day game after your night game guy. I mean, Alvarez is probably going to play at least 5 times, maybe 6 a week. You really can't DH him to get him just to concentrate on hitting because he's not really that good offensively. Plus, JD Martinez can't play anywhere else. And, you know, right now, it seems like within a game, you need him behind the plate, especially in the days he sits, because, again, he's the Diaz whisperer. So you put him at a DH, you don't want to lose your DH at that point. But I think it's fair to start to question, should Torrens play more? I wonder if after today, with the big throw he made, and, you know, how he's been behind the plate, if he sees a little bit more time, depending on the pitcher. And then the bigger question is, I mean, we're going to blame Eric Chavez here for it. What's going on with Alvarez? Why is there the Tim Healy story, those who are whispering in his ear? You know, is he swinging too much for the fences? What happened to the hitter that was evolving in the first half, that was getting big hits, that wasn't swinging for the fences, that looked confident at the plate against big bullpen arms like David Robertson? It's really interesting. It's interesting to think about, because there's really no concrete answer. And then you have the ultimate question. Maybe the kid's not as good as we thought he was. Now, it's too soon to say that. What is he, 24 years old? Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you're not ready to, you know, throw him to the wolves here. I'm not suggesting that. But, you know, even before the second half, early July, I mean, he had a big June where he hit 375. 3 home runs, 12 RBIs, you know, almost a walk for every strikeout. And really, other than that 14, 15 game stretch in June, he hasn't really hit at all this year. And the defense behind the plate on the pitches in the dirt has been noticeably bad. And he's really living off of the Diaz whisperer and, you know, the framing and the fact that he's the future because he was the top prospect. But I'll tell you what, come into spring next year, he's got to start showing some stuff. I mean, there's a lot of baseball left to play. A lot could happen. You know, there's 25 games plus postseason potentially. There's a lot to happen that, you know, we could use to evaluate Alvarez. But one of the things we talked about down the stretch that was a question was that the Mets were entering the deep end of the pool with some kids like Vientos and Alvarez that had never been there before. Well, Vientos continues to be Vientos, the Vientos we've seen all year. Alvarez has gone the exact opposite, in the opposite direction. So I think it's interesting. If I were Carlos Mendoza, I would consider maybe popping Torrens there a little bit more. I don't think the downgrade on defense is that great, and I think the bat is better. Now, I know he's been slumping too, but you know, he got a hit today. He hits the ball hard when he's out there. I find his at-bats more productive, a better process than Alvarez. And there's, like Keith Hernandez said, there's being lost in the dark forest. And then there's being in the forest with no way out. And right now I think Alvarez is in the forest and I don't see any way out. And it's hard to wait and be patient when you only have 25 games left and every game counts. And you also have another guy at the bottom of the lineup in Harrison Bader who's really not paid for his bat and has superseded expectations with the bat. You know, not hitting as well. You basically have a full inning, 3 out of 9 innings, where there's no production. So it'll be interesting to see if Alvarez continues to catch every day, or will Mendoza start to plug Torrens there a little bit more after today's performance. But, you know, this is a concern. having a top prospect not only fall off the cliff offensively, but fall off the cliff in a major way, in a way where he's hitting like a pitcher, he's an automatic out, and looks lost and lacks confidence on the offensive side of the ball. So anyway, that's all I got for you on this Labor Day weekend. I will be on the Subway to Shea podcast. There'll be video. You get to see my ugly mug a little bit with Anthony Rivera later tonight, so check that out. You get a little double dose of Mike Silva today. So I had that information come my way while I was on the air, so I want to share with that with you on the way out. Of course, continue to go to the Substack, become a free subscriber. There's occasional free content. If you're a paid subscriber, you get some great content, stuff that we don't always talk about here on the podcast, plus a commercial-free edition of the show. So I'd love to see you there. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. Of course, you could check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X @TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva @TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva @TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And if you go on Instagram, I'm there too, @TalkingMetsNoG. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.